Hello, I'm Kim Handysides. This is number 0878, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0878. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Paul Pape, who is a creative entrepreneur who operates Paul Pape Designs. He says social media has skewered the idea of success in small business.
Social media has wrecked us as a people. We think that anytime that we post anything on social media, it has to go viral, has to have millions of likes, thousands of likes, and if it doesn't, we're unsuccessful at social media. But the reality is if we think back to a time before social media, and you think about a mom and pop store, if 1,000 people, if 1,000,000 people showed up at that mom and pop store, that would destroy the business. The reality is you only really need 100 consistent customers. I've even talked to people and they say it's 10 consistent customers, but I like to say a rule of 100. You won't become a multi-millionaire, but you will be comfortable enough that you're not worrying how to pay your bills or how to eat.
Leah Renee is a stand-up comic. In her career path, who would she like to model herself as?
I actually would like to be David Sedaris. I think he has it made in the shade. I knew someone who was really struggling when her partner left her right after she had a newborn baby. And when I told her about David Sedaris, she said, oh, that's what got me through those really dark early years where I was now a single mom with a little baby. I would just read his books and just laugh until I cried. So I think that would be the goal, whether it's through stand-up or writing or podcasting, that I help people laugh and think and feel less alone.
Science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is back on the show. One of the things he's talking about is the recent Blue Origin launch pad explosion.
They were doing a static fire test where the rocket is actually held down on the pad and the engines are fired before launch. It was essentially a final dress rehearsal with all the real rocket power in there, and it exploded. It was a massive fireball, something that hasn't been seen in decades in a launch pad explosion. It was seen for hundreds of miles. It was even seen in Tampa, Florida. It lightened up some of the skyline from there on the other side of Florida.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, dad joke theater, Sir Dudley's Poetry Corner, a morning shower thought, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0878, was Kim Handysides, an award-winning voiceover specialist and voice coach, and someone I worked with as a fellow broadcaster back in the day. Thank you very much, Kim, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. In Florida, 33-year-old Brian Schwartz was arrested after leading Flagler County deputies on an unusually leisurely chase June the 5th at 2:23 a.m. Deputies spotted his unlicensed blue motorcycle dubbed Blow-By Betty, which had no lights and sounded like a weed-eater motor. The pursuit reached maximum speeds of 40 miles per hour before slowing to 15 miles per hour through Hidden Trails Park. Sheriff's officials stated, "A pursuit implies speed. This was more of a guided neighborhood tour." The chase ended when Schwartz's motorcycle toppled over, pinning his shin. He faces charges of fleeing and operating without a driver's license, with bail set at $2,800. Sheriff Rick Staley noted Schwartz has been arrested 16 times since 2016 for various offenses, including street racing, credit card fraud, and grand theft. The motorcycle, or should I say glorified motorized weed whacker, or maybe supersonic egg beater, was impounded.
Officer.
Hi.
Is there something I can help you with? the hell are you driving here?
According to Stephen Rossetti, demons can break into the physical world. He says probably many, if not most, of these UFO sightings are demons. Well, according to Robert McElroy, claims like Rossetti's gravely undermine the church's very precise teaching on the devil, demons, and exorcism. Robert McElroy is Cardinal McElroy, who heads the Archdiocese of Washington, and he was announcing that Monsignor Rossetti would no longer be an official exorcist, which the latter said he had been for nearly two decades. By the way, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance has also suggested that UFOs are demons. He said it on a podcast recently.
I don't think they're aliens. I think they're demons anyway, but that's a longer discussion.
I wonder how that's going over with his boss.
Oh, mutiny makes me so angry.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in Bridgewater, Massachusetts, responded to an alarming report. A man wearing camouflage carrying a bazooka. Officers were a bit dubious, considering the location was along a busy road and only one person called it in. Still, they took it seriously and rolled, said Lieutenant Scott Heil. You never know. Since they didn't overreact, they sent one officer, which was more than enough. The man was a landscaper and he was armed with a leaf blower. Wow. Thinking back to the last story, Marvin the Martian probably has more common sense than the caller who alerted police that a man wearing camouflage with a bazooka was on the loose.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
And let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Paul Pape was a starving artist who became a thriving creative entrepreneur, and he continues to open the door to entrepreneurship so that others can follow. He's a TED Talker with several books out. He also runs Paul Pape Designs, and he joins us from Omaha, Nebraska via Riverside.com. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how's it going?
Jess Tickety-Boo, thanks very much for being on the program with us. And in looking at your bio, the first thing I have to ask is, how did you become Santa for Nerds?
It was actually a name that was gifted to me. So I've spent the last 20 years designing and fabricating custom collectibles for people all over the world, as well as major companies like Disney and Universal. And I was actually working with a woman, and she said to me, you're kind of like Santa for Nerds, aren't you? And I've been looking for something that replaces everything else I've put on a business card, and that one really just kind of resonated, so that's where the name came from.
And how did you get into collectibles in the first place? Are you just generally a very creative person with your hands?
I am. My background is in theatrical design, and that basically was scenic and properties design, and what happened is through just taking any opportunity that was kind of thrown my way, I ended up designing a bunch of collectibles for people. And it just really took off in the early days, in like the early 2000s, when everybody's social media was fresh and brand new. And so it allowed me to basically just make whatever people wanted, which is ideal for me because it's very much like a theater production. And you never know what you're gonna have to build until the show comes up, instead of having a singular product to sell. So I just kind of fell into it. And I love being creative, so that works.
Theater design. So that explains your home studio.
That it does, yes.
When you decided to make your home studio, did you put all of the stuff to the wall kind of thing? Or did you kind of plan it in a way that it was just generally yours? You weren't doing something for somebody else.
So I have two different studio spaces set up in here. I have my Gamify Business Tavern, which was obviously built to serve the role of Gamify Business. I play the barkeep in there, so I created a bar type of atmosphere for it. But my main part of my studio is actually a 22-foot long wall that holds thousands of nerdy things that I've built over the years. I call it the Nerd Wall. And that used to serve as a background for when I was live on Twitch. And that's just kind of like an homage. My grandmother, when I was growing up, had a dollhouse museum. And so growing up, I loved that kind of thing. She had knickknacks everywhere. And so to me, it's just kind of an homage to that kind of display. But it also is a nice way to show people what it is that I build, because it's really hard to explain. You know, I can make anything, and then people don't believe me. So they come down to my studio, they look up, and they're like, wow, you really make everything. And so that's the two different setups. So one was intentional, one was more just for me. Plus I love, you know, surrounding myself with the stuff that I've built, because it's very inspirational. I look up on my wall and I see everything from Batman to Harry Potter to Furbies to Star Trek, Stargate, everything's on this wall. And it's just really inspiring for me as a creative.
As a creative, would you say that your grandmother was an inspiration to you throughout her life?
Yeah, she was, and my grandfather was. My grandmother was a director and producer of theater, and my grandfather was the guy who built everything. And so between the two of them, I grew up with a very creative environment there. And then my mother was also super creative. She was very much into crafting. And so between the three of those, that's really where I got my inspiration, absolutely.
You mentioned Gamify, your Gamify business. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Gamify Business is a translation style business that takes business terminology and systems and translate it into something that creative minds can latch onto, which is essentially gaming principles. If you can play a game, you can run a business. And so what I do is I take all the things that are boring and not really clicking for people with a creative style mind, and we turn it into something that's more fun, interactive. It's got rewards and quests, journeys, you earn armor, you level up, all those things that people want to do in games. We actually apply that to your actual business.
Do you find that generally speaking, creatives are just that? They are creative, but they don't necessarily translate to a business mind?
Oh, absolutely. So business-minded people, I like to clarify, or like classify people in two different realms. There's business-minded people who are very linear thinkers, A to B to C to D. And then there are creative-minded people who I call cloud thinkers that are like A to F to squirrel to grass. They're all over the place. And so when you're trying to get somebody who is creative to basically hone in on something for a long period of time, like how to run a business, what happens is their mind drifts, or they get bored, or they'll put it aside because it's not exciting. And so what I do intentionally with Gamify Business is we make sure that every task that we're doing has a different flavor to it. So it doesn't become repetitive. And then we also are very much built around the dopamine effect. So you know, everybody's got a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. What we actually do is like a 5-day plan or a 1-day plan. All these little micro quests that also have rewards built in so that it keeps people interested in moving forward.
Well, you're a creative person. So at what point did you understand or learn the business aspect of it from a creative mind?
I struggle bust like everyone else does when you first come out of it. Like when I went to school, I got a graduate degree in design, and what they do is they train you really well in how to be creative, but then they kick you out the door without any idea of how to become a business. And everybody who graduates with any kind of art degree or is it an entrepreneur has to be creative to some degree, but they also have to understand that they are a business. And so I spent probably a good 5-7 years just trying to figure it out by throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. And I made a lot of mistakes, but I'm one of those people who looks at failure as a step, not a stop. And so I like to look, you know, I can reflect on what I've done wrong, improve it, and keep moving forward. And it's through this trial and error system is how I discovered business. I did it the hard way, but then I thought, why does everybody who graduates with some kind of degree or who wants to be an entrepreneur have to do it the hard way? Why can't we just set out some rules and say, hey, if you are creative minded, these are the rules that you should use instead of this really dry business stuff? And that's really what the impetus of Gamify was for.
So when did you decide that after you had reached the mountaintop that you were going to help other people reach the same peak?
I was about 14 years into my business, and then I was on that platform, Twitch. And instead of being a gamer on Twitch, I was an artist. And so I was working 4 to 6 hours a day, about 5 days a week for 6 years. And what I would do is I would make the art that was my Paul Pape Designs business, Santa for Nerds business, and I would be on camera and people would come in and they would ask me questions. And I discovered pretty early on that people were interested in, you know, how are you being successful? How are you finding clients? All the questions that people have when they're trying to start a business and they're creative. And so I would just answer them. And at first I was answering them in a way that was very businessy. It was very linear. And I noticed that nobody was taking the advice. And so they'd come back and keep asking me more and more questions. And so I decided that there had to be some other way to do it. So I really started digging into the psychology of the creative mind and how to figure out how to speak to them in a way that would resonate. And it actually fell onto one particular client who was really gaming themed. They're big gamer nerds. I was a big gamer nerd. And that's actually how we found it, is they weren't answering the questions correctly, but I knew that they gamed. And so I told them, how about I come back tomorrow and we can play, I don't know, Dungeons and Dragons Business Edition, but instead of playing a wizard or a warrior, you're going to play your role in the business. And instead of fighting dragons and imps, we're going to fight monsters that you're going to encounter within business. And then they played that for about 4 hours. And when we were done, they turned to me and they're like, is this what business is? Because if it is, I finally understand it. And I think it's fun. And that's really where the gamify part of it came into play.
Wow, you've discovered a way to teach people that some teachers have never thought of.
Well, I mean, inspiration strikes, you got to run with it. And if I didn't do it, somebody else would have. So yeah, I kind of lucked out into it, just paying attention to the environment that's around me. But I think that's what creatives do. We kind of, look at what's around us and then we make the best of it. We're inspired constantly by the world around us.
Now, you have something that is called the Rule of 100. What exactly is that?
All right. So I love this rule. So social media has wrecked us as a people. We think that anytime that we post anything on social media, it has to go viral. It has to have millions of likes or thousands of likes. And if it doesn't, we're unsuccessful at social media. But the reality is if we think back to a time before social media, before everybody had these accounts, and you think about a mom and pop store, if a million people showed up at that mom and pop store, that would destroy the business. And so the reality is that you only really need 100 consistent customers. I've even talked to people and they say it's 10 consistent customers, but I like to say a rule of 100. If you can find 100 people who really like what you're selling and they are continuously buying from you, and it doesn't always have to be the same 100 people, but that's about the amount you want to set your sights to, then what happens is that you can sustain your business. You become successful in that regard. You won't become a multimillionaire, but you will be comfortable enough that you're not worrying how to pay your bills or how to eat. And so when we apply that to social media, when you post out there, a lot of people they call it the 300 prison. It's like you're always under 300 people who like it. But when you think of things through the lens of the rule of 100, that's three times the amount of people that you really need to engage with to really get them onto your side to become customers so that you can become comfortable in your business and successful.
I mentioned in the introduction that you have several books out. What's your latest book?
So my latest book is The Bard's Guide to Storycraft, and it is a continuation of my other book. I don't know if I can curse on here. I'm going to guess no, since it's a radio show. So the book that came before it was Quit Selling Your Stuff. There's an expletive there. But the whole point of that book is that product-first selling destroys creative businesses. You should be really selling the artist or the creative behind it and their story. And so instead of just quit selling your stuff, you sell yourself. The latest book is The Bard's Guide to Storycraft, which really goes into how humans really relate to story. We used to tell campfire stories when we were cavemen, and there's a psychology and a methodology to how to tell a really good story. So, people have been using an advertisement for years. If you think back to the Clydesdales for Budweiser or the Polar Bear and Santa Claus for Coca-Cola, they're not really selling the product. They're selling an emotional story, and creatives and entrepreneurs should be doing the same thing, because we fall into this trap of comparison when we're just trying to sell the product. And so the Bard's Guide to Storycraft is told through the bard's perspective. She asks you, what is your pocket story? Everybody's got a story that, you're going to go out and tell at a party. And then they rework it throughout the book through six stages. And it demonstrates like why a story needs this little extra bit in there. And it goes through the psychology of it and the science of it. And then at the end, you've got a story that really affects the human condition that really reaches out and connects with people. And that's how creative-minded people and entrepreneurs should really be approaching their marketing and advertising.
And again, that title for the book is?
The Bard's Guide to Storycraft.
Bard's Guide to Storycraft.
Yep.
Excellent. Paul, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I do appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Paul Pape, creative entrepreneur. His company is Paul Pape Designs, and he's written several books. His latest is The Bard's Guide to Storycraft, How Creative Entrepreneurs Use Story as Their Most Powerful Business Tool. You can go to our website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0878, and you'll find links to Paul's website and his YouTube page, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
And now, Dad Joke Theater.
Did you hear about the short fortune teller who escaped from prison? Now there's a small medium at large.
Join us again for another Stuff File program, Dad Joke Theater.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on the Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
I'm standing and speaking out for Canada. Hi, this is Lisa Laflamme. As a reporter, I've seen the world, and it's always made me realize how lucky I am to be a Canadian. That's why whenever possible, my shopping list is a Canadian shopping list to protect Canadian jobs and support Canadian businesses. Shop as if your country depends on it. Keep your money in Canada for Canada.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to comic Leo Renee, plus Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy. He'll be back along with stories from space. We also have Sir Dudley's Poetry Corner, a morning shower thought, and of course, an idiot of the day, and much more in Stuff File News right here, right now. Australian authorities confiscated more than 100,000 live cockroaches from a single breeder in the country's largest exotic invertebrate seizure. The illegal insects, including Madagascar hissing and Dubia cockroaches, both prohibited species in Australia. Officials believe the larger exotic roaches were sold as cost-effective reptile food since fewer insects are needed due to their size. Both cockroach species cannot be legally imported, kept, bred, or sold in Australia, regardless of how they are obtained. The country maintains strict biosecurity controls to protect agriculture and native wildlife from pest infestations. Wow, they should get some raid. Or better yet, Men in Black.
Roaches check in. They don't check out.
A truck carrying fireworks caught fire June the 6th on Interstate 75 in Tennessee, creating an unplanned pyrotechnic show for highway travelers. Fire and police from several counties responded. Witnesses captured video of fireworks exploding in multiple directions as the truck burned. Traffic stopped in both directions while firefighters worked to extinguish the blaze. No injuries occurred during the incident. The fire department confirmed the spectacular display on social media, but did not reveal what caused the truck to catch fire. Well, I'm guessing that somebody is going to have a shortage of fireworks for July 4th in Tennessee.
The Stuff File program presents asinine situations that make you want to scream into a pillow.
Louisiana police said 40-year-old Victor M. Rivas was recklessly driving a Toyota Supra on Interstate 10 in Jefferson Parish. Investigators said the vehicle had also struck a concrete barrier, causing a tire blowout, but he kept going. Troopers later located the damaged Supra traveling south on Interstate 310 in St. Charles Parish and initiated a traffic stop. While speaking with Rivas, troopers allegedly observed signs of impairment. During the DWI investigation, Rivas ran from officers and jumped from the elevated portion of Interstate 310 into the swamp below. Troopers and deputies with the St. Charles Parish Sheriff's Office began searching for Rivas and later spotted him walking along U.S. Highway 61. When officers approached, Rivas allegedly fled a second time into another swampy area. That's two times he jumped into a swamp. By the way, you know what's in Louisiana swamps? Alligators. Video shared by St. Charles Parish Sheriff's Office appears to show Rivas swimming toward the edge of the swamp while an alligator trailed after him and eventually attacked him. Rivas suffered injuries to both arms. Despite those injuries, authorities said he continued trying to evade officers before he was eventually located and taken into custody. He was taken to hospital for treatment and later booked on charges of DWI, his second offense, and resisting an officer. Police also obtained additional warrants charging him with hit and run and careless operation in connection with the earlier crash in Jefferson Parish. Judging by the humorous Facebook posts by the Louisiana State Police, apparently alligators are now on the payroll and available for commendations.
This has been the Stuff File program, asinine situations that make you want to scream into a pillow.
And now, this.
The Stuff File presents Sir Dudley Piddley Havisham Sedgwick Smythe's Poetry Corner.
An artistic young man called Beau to an art class decided to go. The teacher said, "Not right, your page is all white." Beau said, "It is a polar bear in snow."
And let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Leah Renee is a former Mormon who has lived nomadically across the U.S. and the U.K. with her family. She has three children, one of which she gave birth to in her kitchen. She has lost 90 pounds in a year and a half and has worked as an exotic veterinarian. Oh, and she's a stand-up comic, which leads me to believe that she has no shortage of material. Leah joins us from Philadelphia via Riverside.com. Hi, Leah.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. As I said, you can't have any shortage of material in your routine just on based on what I said in the introduction.
Well, thank you. I did want to clarify. I worked at an exotic veterinary clinic. I did not get my degree in exotic veterinary medicine. Just in case anybody wants me to neuter their bearded dragon, I am not qualified to do that.
Ah. Okay.
So, but yes, the things that I saw and heard in that clinic, I actually worked there for the bits. I may one day write like Scrubs, but for veterinary medicine, because the people that came in and the cases were so off the wall that I just thought this stuff writes itself.
Did you always have a sense of humor from childhood? And what made you decide that stand-up was in your future?
Mm. Yes, my parents split up when I was really little, and my mom moved to Ireland. So a lot of comedians actually lost a parent as a kid. I have at least half a dozen of my friends here in Philly that are comics that a parent died before they reached adulthood. So it's very common because you want to cheer people up. So I never considered it as a full-time career because I was a very devout Mormon. I knew that the lifestyle meant a lot of travel. And I watched a movie, Mr. Saturday Night with Billy Crystal, when I was a little kid. And I remember thinking what a jerk he was. And I couldn't be a jerk like that. He was really mean to his family. And so I thought, well, if that's a stand-up comedian, I definitely can't do that. But I left Mormonism and then felt free to pursue whatever I felt deep down would be fun, and started dabbling in stand-up comedy, and then just decided I'd tried everything else. So I may as well give this a go because, you know, hashtag YOLO.
Well, you said dabbled. So when did you make the leap from the shallow end of the pool into the deep end?
January 2022. It was right after I turned 40. I decided to do that. Now, prior to that, my first ever stand-up gig was actually at a church talent show run by the women's organization. So I started actually as a Mormon and did a few open mics in my town, and I liked it a lot. I was serious about it. I'd take notes and everything. And then I got pregnant with my third and stopped doing as many mics. And then the baby was born. Then I kind of put it on hold and slowly went back out. And then the pandemic hit. So then there weren't really any local shows to go to for a while. So I got the bug before I went full time. But after the year of living nomadically that you mentioned, that's when I did some soul searching and thinking about all the things that I like to do. And I had had a bunch of little side hustles that I didn't even mention before, you know, photography and videography. I used to run a retail business. I used to invent products and license them to other companies. So I had just done lots of little side things, but I realized I just like ideas, and stand-up is pure ideas. I don't have to make prototypes and send them out and approve them from the factory. It's like, I just get on stage, I say a thing, and then I leave, and it's fantastic. So that's when I decided 2022, when we were on the road, and we lived nomadically in the UK for 6 months and then across the US, and we would stay in each city that we were considering moving to for anywhere from a week to a month. And then I would do comedy there to test out what it was like. And Philadelphia ended up winning the Miss America contest of American cities. So that's why we ended up here. There's a lot of flavor and color and life here, and it felt like a really good place to grow as a comedian.
As a comedian, are you someone that just naturally observes things? Because as you mentioned, you've gone through the United States and you've gone to the UK. And so you've been here, there, and everywhere. Do you pick up a sense of what the vibe is in whatever particular area you are living in? And is that some of the things that makes you a good stand-up?
Yeah, I would say observational skills is something that you would find. I would even go on record as saying all stand-ups, at least most stand-ups, you have to be aware in the room if you're losing a crowd, you know, learning how to control that kind of energy. That's why a lot of comedians have had pretty colorful upbringings, because they had to kind of read the room. They may have had a parent with a short temper, or they may have been one of 10 kids and tried to get attention to see what would work. So Seinfeld actually said a lot of comedians, when they travel, like to be alone during the day because they're tired of being perceived. So it goes both ways. You're both observing a lot of things and going, that's weird, why would they say that? But you're also being observed by other people for the hour that you're on stage. So a lot of comedians have anxiety and ADHD, OCD, all these different things, because we're just quite wide-eyed and observant and ready to point out the absurdities of what we experience as human beings.
I mentioned earlier that one of your three children was born in the kitchen. You have to share that story.
Oh, okay. So this was on purpose. I was a full-blown Mormon trad wife, but kind of the granola variety, not the layered hair boob job kind, the like sewing your own clothes, making your own bread kind. So one of my babies was born in the kitchen, one of them was born in the living room, and one of them was born in the bedroom. And as I like to say, the kitchen is the best place to have a baby, because where else are you going to find placenta that fresh to eat? Okay. I did not eat my placenta, for the record. But yeah, I had a wonderful midwife, and I wanted to own that experience. And the place I felt the most comfortable giving birth was in my home. But I know a lot of other people, it's in a hospital or a freestanding birth center. I support women in whatever venue they choose, but I wanted to sleep in my own bed the first night and eat Chipotle and do whatever I wanted. So I chose home birth.
What type of material do you have in your stand-up routine normally?
I do mention childbirth because there's so few female comedians and even less that have given birth. A lot of people want me to talk about Mormonism. I did not plan on sharing that because when I left it, I felt like I had given so much of my life to it that I was ready to move on. But anytime I would briefly mention it, it would derail the whole show. People would have questions. If I was on panel shows, that's all they wanted to talk about. And yeah, Seinfeld says the audience is the editor. So I started talking about Mormonism a lot more in my comedy. Some of it is observational stuff as well. But while I talk about being a parent, I don't talk about it a whole lot because I want to respect the privacy of my children. So I could share funny things that they've said or they've done, but I know that once I put something out there, I can't call it back. So that's another reason I haven't published my Mormon material. That's for live shows only, because I'm not really interested in the feedback and the comments from people. I'm more interested in everyone in that show having a good time. I might eventually post some things, but I want to be respectful because I felt like it was a good way for me to be brought up. I got a lot of structure and a great community. So I don't want to just come off as this ex-Mormon who's spilling the tea and here's all the things that are wrong about the church. So my goal is to make people laugh and think. So if I'm going to trash on something, I'd like to trash on the harmful effects of social media or things like that, rather than a church that I think is actually trying to do a lot of good in the world.
How old are your three children?
They are 7, 10, and 13.
So I would assume that the 13-year-old and maybe the 7-year-old knows what you do for a living.
Oh, yeah. All of them do. They actually like it. They think that it's fun because when they tell their friends think that it's cool. But I think it's cool that their friends' parents have money. I think that's nice.
Do they have a sense of humor?
They do. Yeah, they're very fun. And we try to raise them right. We watch a lot of Taskmaster and Would I Lie to You? My 13-year-old loves Seinfeld and The Office. We talk about comedy a lot and love to laugh together as a family. And that's kind of what I've replaced maybe my Mormon values with, is just good fun together so that they want to be a part of the family as they grow older, that they have a lot of fun memories of laughing together.
Well, speaking of memories, now that your oldest is 13 years old, do you ever get into situations where the 13-year-old will say to you, don't use this in one of your routines?
It's actually the opposite. She'll say, you can say that on stage if you want. And I just know that she might be 16, and especially with the way AI works now, basically everything can be transcribed and then just put out there. And so people are using AI now to search for things. So it might find one time that I mentioned one thing, and then all of a sudden it says, Leah Renee has a 13-year-old who once said that she thought making fur coats out of rabbits was silly, that, you know, I'd pick a poodle, I'd skin a poodle, which actually is something that she said. So I'm going against my own thing. But that was something she said I thought was funny. I don't say it on stage, but just her she was much younger, observing that poodles are really soft. And if you were going to make a fur coat, she said, I'd skin a poodle. And I just thought that is the darkest thing to come from a little kid, but it was years ago and now I regret saying it. So I hope this doesn't get transcribed and follow her around. But she did say I could use it. So there, I'll tell her, full disclosure.
So what is the goal? I mean, you've been doing this full time for 4 years now. What is the goal? What is the pinnacle that you would like to reach as a comic?
I actually would like to be David Sedaris. I think he has it made in the shade. I would put a little more live performance than he has. He's primarily a writer, but he goes on tour and he reads the thing that he's written like you would at an open mic, and then he edits it in real time. He bounces between different places. I like living nomadically. He does that. And his writing and his humor really heals and helps people, not in a direct way like sort of a life coach, but just because he's so frank and vulnerable. I knew someone who was really struggling when her partner left her right after she had a newborn baby. And when I told her about David Sedaris, she said, oh, that's what got me through those really dark early years where I was now a single mom with a little baby. I would just read his books and just laugh until I cried. So I think that would be the goal, whether it's through stand-up or writing or podcasting, that I help people laugh and think and feel less alone.
You said you'd like to be David Sedaris. Would you like his wardrobe?
I think he's great. I wear all neon. That's my wardrobe choice. So I like when somebody is like fun and weird. And I love living in Philly because I feel like all of my black friends give me fist bumps for breaking out of my shell. Because I think a lot of white people wear, you know, cardigans and Dockers and just kind of other things. So when I'm wearing head to toe neon and I'll just be walking by somewhere, they're like, all right. And like, give me like a high five. And so I'm like, okay, I'm marching to the beat of my own drum. I shouldn't be self-conscious about my neon corduroys and go-go boots.
You have a YouTube page. What can people find when they go to your YouTube page?
Right now, I have podcasts that I've been doing. I do have stand-up clips from a couple of years ago, so I might be adding more short things, but it's my podcast. Sometimes I talk about leaving Mormonism. Sometimes I do interviews. It's me just kind of exploring the space and talking the way that I talk to people after shows when I have conversations with them.
How long is your podcast and how often does it come out?
It comes out every Friday. I'm doing shorter episodes now, like 15 minutes, but most of them are about an hour long, especially the interview ones. So most of them are an hour.
And what is the name of the podcast?
The Leah Renee Podcast. I kept it simple for search engines.
Excellent. Leah, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Comic Leah Renee. You can go to our website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0878, and you'll find links to Leah's website and also her YouTube page where you can find her weekly podcast. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Giving you something to think about. This is Morning Shower Thoughts.
Long ago, when men cursed and beat the ground with sticks, it was called witchcraft. Today, it's called golf.
Morning Shower Thoughts from the Stuff File program.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
The Serial Killer's Son Takes a Wife by Michael Libling is not like any serial killer novel you've ever read before.
Go ahead. I dare you to figure it out before the chilling end.
Find out what it's like to be the offspring of a multiple murderer.
Locked in a room or locked in your mind, it's really all the same.
The Serial Killer's Son Takes a Wife by Michael Libling. Available everywhere you buy books.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy, is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky, and also National Geographic's Stargazer's Atlas, The Ultimate Guide to the Night Sky. And Andrew, it's been a difficult month with many setbacks, starting with Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket explosion.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that was happening during the static fire test of the rocket out at Cape Canaveral in Florida. It's the launch complex that Blue Origin is using to test their heavy lift vehicle. Now, this is a huge rocket. It's about the size of a 30-story building, and it's what Blue Origin hopes to lift the, not just satellites, but also help with Artemis moon missions. And so they were doing a static fire test where the rocket is actually held down on the pad and the engines are fired before launch. It's basically it was essentially a final dress rehearsal with all the real
real rocket power in there. And it exploded. It was a massive fireball, something that hasn't been seen in decades in a launch pad explosion before. It was likened to a previous one that happened in the old Soviet Union days in the 1960s. It was seen for like hundreds of miles. It was even seen in Tampa, Florida. It lightened up some of the skyline from there, that on the other side of Florida. So that's how big this was. Now, their investigation is going on. It definitely means there's going to be delays. At least they won't be testing New Glenn before the end of the year. That's what it looks like, at least. And that's an optimistic look. But this puts NASA in a bind. There's no question, because they're relying on New Glenn to lift their moon lander that Blue Origin is building for NASA.
So how much of a delay will it be for NASA?
We don't know. At this point, we know it's not the end of New Glenn, but this is, they have to rebuild part of the launch pad, and this may put a damper on the plans that NASA has of testing the moon lander in orbit with the Artemis 3 mission that's scheduled right now for next year, in a year from now. So in 2027, the summer of 2027. And I don't know if they'll be able to make it. Everyone's kind of wondering what's going to happen.
Meanwhile, there are some other issues. SpaceX says that their own issues are taking place with the FAA grounding Starship V3.
Yeah. So while we were talking so much about the New Glenn with Blue Origin, there's this whole other half of the story regarding the moon launches, right? So Blue Origin had their pad explosion. SpaceX's Starship has been testing their version 3 of this mega rocket that they are planning to use to help NASA's Artemis mission go back to the moon. It seems like that their version 3 Starship has also been grounded after their flight 12 mishap. Starship, now just to put it in perspective, is the largest and most powerful rocket system ever built, right? So this version 3, it's about over 400 feet tall. It's taller than the Statue of Liberty, just to put it into perspective. And it had a lot of successes this last test flight. The upper stage reached space, it deployed test satellites, it survived re-entry, and it actually made a controlled splashdown. But it was the Super Heavy booster that lifted up that Starship that didn't complete its planned control return and had a very hard splashdown. And the FAA basically is treating this as a mishap that requires complete investigation before any other flight is allowed again. So, put it in perspective, this is a test and the idea is to find problems, but it's a very public test. They're trying to be very fast in their development. And you have to remember, SpaceX also have a huge contract with NASA to build this Starship that they're testing to use to land astronauts on the moon, just like how Blue Origin is. So you have two competing companies, both having problems with their heavy lift vehicles that will lift into orbit those the moon landing vehicles that NASA needs.
So we've mentioned several problems down the ground, but there is a problem in space. The astronauts on the ISS took shelter in SpaceX's Dragon because of a problem in the ISS.
Yeah, so the International Space Station, it's the size of a football field. It's been there for over two decades. And this is something that, has had a lot of problems. There's a lot of pressurized modules that are part of it. And there was a leak in a Russian module. And it sounds scary, but the astronauts were told basically to to take shelter in the Dragon, SpaceX's Dragon capsule, while the Russian astronauts, a pair of them, were trying to find what exactly is going on. So there's actually a leak that's associated with a transfer tunnel that's very near the Russian Zvezda service module. It's basically one of the oldest parts of the space station. And this leak has been known for years, and it's been managed with repair work. What's changed now is that the repair operation that was significant enough that NASA wanted the crew in a safer area, basically on the Dragon capsule, just in case. You know, so you have to remember that this Dragon capsule, it's not just a taxi vehicle to and from space. When it's docked to the space station, it's considered kind of like a crew lifeboat. So if something goes really wrong sideways and it's dangerous on board the space station, astronauts are able to go into Dragon, undock, and come home. So some of these modules on the space station are old, and the Russian one is one of the oldest. And so, you know, it's been there for a quarter of a century. Things are happening that may need the astronauts on board to evacuate. And that's, they didn't have to leave the space station. They were allowed to go back after a few hours. But it just shows how contentious this kind of a leak like this can be on an old spacecraft like this.
Well, let's end on a happy note. And that is, NASA revealed the Artemis 3 astronauts. We were waiting for this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, these are the human faces to the Artemis moon program. And NASA revealed the Artemis 3 crew. This is the crew that will be launching next summer, 2027, into low Earth orbit. This is Randy Bresnik, Luca Parmenato, Andre Douglas, and Frank Rubio. Other than Andre Douglas, the other three are all veteran astronauts. They are going to be going on a very critical test mission, focused to stay in Earth orbit. They're going to be testing docking with the moon landers that Blue Origin and SpaceX are developing. Hopefully, both of these moon landers will be tested, and it's going to be a long mission to do all of this docking and undocking with two lunar landers. We're talking could be as long as a 2-week mission that they're planning. Also, they're going to be looking at the new spacesuits they'll be testing out that future Artemis astronauts will be using on missions on the surface of the moon. They'll be testing everything out like that. So hopefully, we'll be launching these four astronauts next year. And what's interesting, by the way, just a little side note, is that Luca Parmenato is actually an Italian astronaut. So he's bringing the European Space Agency experience as a test pilot to this mission as well.
There is so much to talk about, but we've run out of time. So do you want to go to Patreon?
Yeah, let's do that.
And we'll even talk about a little stargazing.
Awesome. Clear skies.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. You can go to our website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0878, and you'll find links to Andrew's site to get your own personal autographed copy of his books. Patreon subscribers, you can hear more of Andrew as a Patreon reward extra, where we'll continue to discuss the race to the moon with lunar bases, correcting the orbit of a space telescope, and more. Just go to our Patreon page, and if you're not already a member, become one of the select patrons of the show. Visit patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And we're just about out of racetrack. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you right here, right now. Aaron Moss, a 34-year-old software engineer in North Carolina, successfully obtained a religious exemption allowing her to avoid using AI tools at work. The Unitarian Universalist argued in April that AI conflicts with her religious beliefs due to environmental and ethical concerns. Her tech entertainment employer granted the unusual accommodation in mid-May. Moss now writes and reviews code manually, finding her productivity matches AI using colleagues. She said AI doesn't really seem to be this game changer. Legal experts suggest other employees might pursue similar exemptions, especially after Pope Leo called for AI to be disarmed. Workplace discrimination specialist John Meehan warned employers may need to develop policies quickly to handle such requests. Gee, what if God were AI, like in the movie Warning?
How long have you been with your current God?
4 years.
Okay, you're supposed to renew your faith every 18 months.
No, you're not.
Yeah? I'm surprised he stayed with you this long.
Just give me a new model, then.
It'll be shipped to you by tomorrow.
How am I going to pray?
You'll have to do it manually.
Erin's going to have her mind blown by this movie. And boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff I'll present The Idiot of the Day.
Deputies with the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office responded to a Walmart in Venice, Florida, the morning of June 4th after receiving a 911 call regarding a shooting. According to police, the caller was at Walmart when they heard a popping sound ring out. The caller also reported seeing a trail of blood near the bathroom area at the front of the store. Responding deputies evacuated the store, but no one was located inside the premises. A short while later, an individual suffering from an apparent gunshot wound was located at the Sarasota Memorial Hospital campus in Venice. Deputies said that surveillance video from the Walmart showed a man entering the store with a holstered gun in the waistband of his shorts. The video showed that while attempting to adjust the gun in the holster, the gun discharged and struck the man in the leg and the groin area. The sheriff's office said that this appears to be an isolated incident with no threat to the public. Well, it is a threat to his lineage. Now, why, oh why, would you put a loaded gun into the waistband of your shorts, thus bringing new meaning to the term half-cocked? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0878. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find info and links on the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0878. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And you can find me on Facebook, Spoutable, Mastodon, and Blue Sky as PA Holder. Check us out on patreon.com, or you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including kdxradio.com, and over the air on stations like
World FM New Zealand,
WNRHLPFM Newport Richey, Florida,
KZZHLPFM Eureka, California,
WFNULP St. Paul, Minnesota,
CKUWFM Winnipeg,
CFMU Hamilton,
CKLU Sudbury,
Local 107.3 FM St. John,
CHSR Fredericton.
Plus, streaming on any streaming service your little heart desires. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm Peter's lifelong manservant, Sir Dudley Piddley Havisham Sedgwick Smythe. I've always imparted words of wisdom upon Peter, but he's like Teflon. Nothing sticks.